Okay, picture this for a second. You've done it. You finally bought the car. It's a Mercedes C-Class. You're cruising down the highway. The cabin is, it's just eerily silent. The leather smells incredible. And you're gripping that steering wheel with the silver three-pointed star. It just feels engineered.
It feels like a vault. That is absolutely the sensation they aim for.
Exactly. It feels heavy, precise. It's the universal symbol that you've made it. It's the dream. But here's the record scratch.
Ah, here it comes.
You're not cruising on the Autobahn with cool, crisp German air. You're in stop-and-go traffic on the Dallas-North Tollway. It's August. It is 105 degrees outside.
Oh, yeah.
And suddenly, that precise German machine. It's not a luxury item anymore. It's a hostage.
That's a very dramatic way to put it, but honestly, it's completely accurate.
Well, that's the mission for today's deep dive. We're stripping away all the marketing and looking at the hidden reality of owning a car like this, specifically the C-Class, in a harsh place like Dallas or Plano, Texas.
A really unforgiving environment.
Exactly. We've got a stack of really technical insights from Autoscope. They're a European auto specialist right there in the thick of it. And we're going to figure out, how does a machine built for the Autobahn handle the brutal reality of Texas heat and urban sprawl?
And I want to set the stage here immediately because this catches so many people off guard. The answer is a lot more than just, oh, change your oil.
Right.
We're going to be talking about physics, material science, and why geography, literally where you park your car at night, matters just as much as the badge on the hood.
That was the biggest surprise for me in the reading. I always just assumed a car is a car. If it runs in Berlin, it runs in Plano.
Nope.
But you're saying the environment effectively changes the engineering requirement.
Completely. I mean, you have to understand what a modern C-Class is. It's not just an engine and wheels. It's a dense collection of complex control modules, high-pressure hydraulic systems, and very specific rubber and plastic compounds. So when you take that system, which is optimized for a temperate European climate, and you drop it into a blast furnace like North Texas, the failure patterns just, they completely change. We are not seeing the same problems here that a mechanic in London or Seattle sees.
So let's unpack this Texas factor. The source material uses a term that sounds like a laundry setting, but I have a feeling it's much more expensive. Thermal cycling.
Ah, yes.
What exactly is happening here?
It is the silent killer of engines. Thermal cycling is simply a material heating up and expanding and then cooling down and contracting. It's physics 101. Every car does this.
Sure, it's normal operation.
But in Dallas, the delta, the difference between the extremes is what kills you. Imagine the engine bay. You're stuck in traffic on US 75. There's no airflow. The pavement is radiating like 130 degree heat upwards. The engine's running at over 200 degrees.
Wow.
Everything under that hood, plastic, rubber, aluminum, is just swollen with heat.
Okay, so it's all expanded to its absolute physical limit.
Right. Then a thunderstorm rolls in, drops the temp 30 degrees in 20 minutes. Or you park it, it cools overnight. That constant extreme expansion and contraction, it fatigues the materials. It's like taking a paperclip and bending it back and
It
forth.
snaps.
It snaps, exactly. And according to the Autoscope data, the first thing to snap is usually the rubber and plastic components, specifically the engine mounts.
And on the C-Class, these aren't just solid blocks of rubber, right?
No, not like on an old truck. They're liquid-filled hydraulic mounts designed to absorb every little vibration so you don't feel the engine in the cabin.
Wait, they're liquid-filled, like a waterbed for the engine.
That is a fantastic analogy. Yes, that's why the ride is so incredibly smooth. But under that intense Texas thermal stress, the rubber casing cracks way faster than the engineers in Stuttgart probably
And
anticipated.
the fluid leaks out.
The fluid leaks out, the mount collapses, and suddenly that luxury isolation is gone. The whole car vibrates. It feels like a tractor.
And I've got to assume this heat attacks the cooling system itself, too.
Oh, it attacks everything made of polymers. The coolant hoses are a prime example. In a mild climate, they stay flexible for years. In Texas heat, the plasticizers in the rubber, the chemicals that make it stretchy, they literally bake out.
So the hose gets brittle.
It turns into hard, brittle plastic. So instead of flexing when you hit a bump,
It cracks.
it cracks. And because the cooling system is under high pressure, you don't just get a drip, you get a catastrophic loss of coolant. And on a modern aluminum engine, if you overheat it even once, you can warp the cylinder head. That's game over.
The source also mentioned batteries. I know my phone dies if I leave it in the sun. but I assumed a car battery was tougher.
It's just basic chemistry. Heat is a catalyst. It speeds up the chemical reaction inside the battery. It essentially ages it, even when the car is just parked.
So it's just cooking itself.
It is literally cooking the electrolyte fluid inside. In the UK, a battery might last 6 years. In Dallas, if you get 3 or 4, you're winning.
Okay, so the environment is actively attacking the car's materials. But then there's the workload. The Autoscope report points out that the AC and engine cooling are just working overtime.
Think about the duty cycle. In a mild climate, the AC compressor cycles on and off. It gets a break.
Yeah.
In a Texas summer, that compressor is running at near 100% capacity constantly just to keep the cabin at 72. You're putting severe service hours on a component during normal driving.
There's a specific note in the source about condensers taking a beating, but not just from heat.
Right. This is a double whammy unique to our infrastructure here. The condenser, it looks like a radiator. It sits right at the very front of the car to catch the wind.
Okay, so it's exposed.
Very exposed. And on Dallas highways, which are notorious for construction and loose gravel, the condenser is also catching rocks.
It's a rock magnet.
It is. And the C-Class has these wide grille openings. A rock hits that condenser at 70 miles per hour, punctures a tiny hole, and poof, your refrigerant's gone. No AC. And getting to that condenser to replace it is a huge job because of how tightly everything is packed in there.
So the takeaway for the Texas factor is that maintenance isn't just, did I hit 10,000 miles? It's, did my car survive the summer?
Precisely. You are combating environmental stress, not just mileage wear.
I want to pivot now to the car itself. We keep saying C-Class, but I realize reading the source, that's a huge umbrella. We're talking about a whole lineage of cars.
It really is. And this is where it gets fascinating, especially if you're a fan of engineering history. Mercedes iterates the C-Class in generations with these W codes.
And the Autoscope data breaks down the failures by generation.
Which is crucial because a C-Class from 2005 has completely different, let's call them personality flaws, than one from 2015.
Okay, so let's walk through this timeline. Let's start with the early 2000s.
Yeah.
The W203, that's the one with the peanut headlights, right?
The W203, yep. This was a transitional era. Mercedes was moving from purely mechanical stuff to heavy digital integration. And, you know, like any teenager, it had growing pains. The source notes electrical faults as a major theme.
Of course.
But the big mechanical scary one is the transmission conductor plate.
Conductor plate? That sounds like something on a motherboard.
It sort of is. It's the brain of the transmission. But here's the kicker. It sits inside the transmission. It's submerged in hot transmission fluid.
That seems like a terrible place to put a computer.
You'd think so, wouldn't you? But it allows for precise monitoring of fluid pressure and speed. The problem was, in the W203, the speed sensors on this plate were just prone to failure.
And what happens then?
The car goes into limp mode. It locks itself in second gear to protect the engine. So you're trying to merge onto the highway and suddenly no power. You're just crawling.
Ouch. Okay, let's move forward. Late 2000s to mid-2010s, the W204,
yeah.
Boxier, more angular. You still see tons of these in Dallas.
The W204, generally considered the tank of the modern era, very robust, but it had this one bizarre, catastrophic flaw, the steering lock module.
The mechanical lock.
It's an electronic security feature. You take the key out, a little motor zips a pin into the steering column so the wheel can't turn.
Great for anti-theft.
Until the little motor inside that module burns out.
So what happens then?
You put your key in and nothing. Silence. The car won't start, won't turn on accessory mode, nothing. Because the computer thinks the steering is still locked, it effectively bricks the car.
From a tank to a brick. Okay, next up, the W205. Mid-2010s to early 2020s. The curvy one that looks like a mini S-Class.
Right. And this is where the engineering philosophy shifts big time. We see the mass adoption of turbochargers across the whole lineup.
For fuel economy.
Exactly. Smaller engines, bigger power. So the repairs shift to turbo systems and, interestingly, suspension bushings.
Why suspension specifically on this model?
Well, they moved to a much more complex multi-link suspension to make the car feel sportier. More links mean more control arms. More control arms mean more rubber bushings.
And more rubber bushings in Texas heat means.
We know how that ends.
And finally, the current model, the W206.
The W206 is basically a smartphone on wheels. The dashboard is all screens. The source lists, software updates, driver assistance calibration, and hybrid components. We're not changing steering locks anymore. We're recalibrating the radar that keeps you in your lane.
It's amazing. The mechanic has to go from being a plumber fixing leaks to an IT guy fixing code.
That is the perfect analogy, and it explains why diagnostics are so hard now. You can't just listen for a rattle. You have to plug into the car's neural network.
So speaking of complexity, let's go under the hood. The source makes a big deal about engine complexity in the newer models. Seems like there's a trade-off. We get great speed and mileage, but we pay for it with fragility.
Fragility might be too strong, but intolerance to neglect is spot on. And the heart of this issue is the turbocharger.
The source has a very strict rule about this. It says oil changes are non-negotiable every 5,000 to 7,000 miles. But I swear the manual sometimes says 10,000 miles or more.
This is the hill the independent experts will die on. The manufacturer's marketing department loves to say low cost of ownership, only service once a year.
Sure.
But the engineers and the people fixing them at Autoscope, they know the truth.
Why is the turbo so sensitive, though?
A turbocharger spins at over 100,000 RPM. Think about that speed. It gets glowing, red hot. The only thing keeping that spinning metal from melting itself is a thin film of oil. That oil isn't just lubricating, it is literally cooling the bearing.
So if you wait 10,000 miles, that oil?
It breaks down thermally, it starts to turn into sludge or what we call coke carbon deposits. If you have dirty, sludgy oil hitting a bearing spinning that fast, it's like sandpaper. Or worse, it clogs the tiny oil feed line.
And then the turbo starves.
Starves and dies. The source mentions wastegate failure. If the wastegate gets gummed up with carbon, you lose power, get a check engine light, and you're looking at a repair bill that is thousands of dollars, all to save $150 on an oil change.
They also mentioned timing chain stretch. That just sounds terrifying.
It happens. The chain keeps the top and bottom of the engine in sync. It relies on hydraulic tensioners pushed by oil pressure to stay tight.
And dirty oil messes that up.
Dirty oil wears down the pins in the chain. Over time, the chain physically gets longer, like an old bicycle chain that slips gears.
Exactly. And if it stretches too much, the timing goes off, the engine runs rough, and in a worst-case scenario, the pistons smash into the valves. The engine destroys itself instantly. Okay, note to self, change the oil. What about the transmission? I feel like I've heard this myth for years that modern transmissions are sealed for life.
The sealed for life myth. It is one of the most dangerous things in the automotive world.
So what does life mean in this context?
To a manufacturer, life usually means the length of the warranty.
Of course it does.
Once you pass 50,000 or 100,000 miles, if it breaks, that's your problem. But if you want the car to actually last, you have to service it.
What's happening inside that requires service? It's a closed system, right?
It is, but it's full of clutch packs that wear down. That creates dust friction material floating in the fluid. Remember that conductor plate we talked about? The computer submerged in fluid?
Yeah, the brain in the bath.
If that bath water becomes a soup of metal shavings and clutch material, it creates electrical shorts on that computer board. It clogs the little solenoids. So by changing the fluid every 40,000 to 60,000 miles, you're literally washing the brain of the transmission.
It's like dialysis for the car.
That is a great analogy. Keep the fluid clean. Keep the patient alive.
Let's talk about the ride itself, because a huge reason you buy a Mercedes is for that wafting feeling.
Yeah.
But in Dallas, well, the roads fight back.
They certainly do. The source highlights the specific mix we have. Uneven urban surfaces, potholes, manhole covers, and high-speed highway expansion joints.
Oh, the rhythmic thump-thump on the overpasses. It drives me crazy.
Exactly. That's a repetitive impact load. European suspensions are tuned for smooth asphalt. When you hammer them with Dallas potholes, specific parts fail. The source lists control arm bushings and ball joints.
And these aren't simple parts, are they?
Often, no. The control arm bushings on a C-Class are frequently hydro bushings filled with fluid to dampen road noise. When you hit a crater on Mockingbird Lane, you can rupture that bushing.
What does that feel like to the driver? Is it dangerous?
At first, it's subtle. The steering feels a little loose. Maybe you hear a clunk. But the source makes a great point. Worn suspension ruins the luxury value proposition. You're paying for a premium experience, but you're driving a vibrating, clunking car. It feels cheap.
And I imagine it just chews up tires.
Aggressively. If the suspension geometry is loose, the tires scrub against the road. You'll wear out the inside edge of a $300 tire in a few months.
Now, braking. This really stood out to me. On a Mercedes, the source says you frequently replace the rotors with the pads. Every single time.
Why? This is a philosophy difference. German engineering prioritizes performance and safety above all else. They use what we call soft rotors.
Soft metal.
Relatively speaking, yes. The rotor face is designed to wear down with the pad. This maximizes the friction. It gives you that incredible initial bite when you touch the brake pedal.
So the rotor is sacrificing itself for stopping power.
Exactly. It's a consumable part. By the time the pads are done, the rotors are usually below their minimum thickness spec. If you try to reuse them, they'll warp or crack or just scream at you.
So don't be shocked by the bill.
Correct. It's the price of performance.
Let's move to the invisible car, the electronics. You called the W206 a smartphone on wheels, but even the older ones are rolling computers.
They are. The source calls it the nervous system. Modern repair is largely electrical diagnostics.
And it's not just my radio doesn't work, is it?
Oh, no. We're talking battery control modules. If the voltage drops even slightly, maybe because of that heat-damaged battery, the car starts shutting down non-essential systems. You might see a weird warning like, blind spot assist inoperative, just because your battery is a little low.
And here's the aha moment for me, from the source. Maintenance now includes software updates.
Sounds wild, doesn't it?
It does. I update my phone, sure, but I have to update my transmission.
You do. Manufacturers release updates constantly. Maybe they found a bug in the code that controls how the transmission shifts from third to fourth. You might think your transmission is broken, but it might just need a software patch.
So you don't need a wrench, you need a download.
And you need calibration. This is huge. Let's say you get a crack in your windshield from a rock on I-35.
Which happens to everyone in Dallas eventually.
Right. You replace the glass, but the camera that watches the lanes is mounted behind that glass. If that camera is off by a fraction of a millimeter, the car thinks the lane is 3 feet to the left. The whole system has to be digitally re-zeroed.
And you can't do that in your driveway.
No. That requires dealer-level tools. It's a precision adjustment.
So this brings us to the big question. The strategy. How do you own one of these without going bankrupt? The Autoscope experts seem to have a clear philosophy.
Their philosophy is proactive versus reactive.
Which sounds like good life advice, but what does it mean for a car?
It means if you wait for the car to break down on the side of the road, you've already lost. That is the most expensive way to own a Mercedes. You're paying for a tow for rush diagnostics.
The domino effect.
Exactly. Proactive means changing the water pump before it seizes because you know it's a weak point at 60,000 miles. It turns a $500 repair into planned maintenance, not a $2,000 emergency.
What about parts? Genuine Mercedes versus aftermarket stuff online?
The source is very clear on this. For a car this sensitive, genuine is the only safe bet.
Is that just snobbery?
No, it's about compatibility. An aftermarket sensor might look identical, it might fit, but if its resistance value is slightly off from what the computer expects, the computer will just reject it. You'll still have a check engine light.
So you save $50 on the part,
yeah.
But you pay double in labor doing the job twice.
Exactly. It's about preventing repeat repairs.
And speaking of shops, dealer versus independent specialist, what's the dynamic there?
The source suggests that independent specialists offer a sweet spot. The key is that they must specialize. You don't want a generalist who works on Fords trying to diagnose a Mercedes.
You don't have the software tools.
Or the specific knowledge.
Yeah.
But a specialist shop like Autoscope has the factory diagnostic tools. And they often have lower labor rates than the dealer. And you can actually talk to the person working on your car.
What about warranties?
That's a common fear, but quality independents offer their own. Autoscope, for instance, has a 3-year, 36,000-mile warranty. And crucially, this is federal law. You do not have to go to the dealer to maintain your factory warranty.
That's really important for people to know. You're not trapped.
No, you have options. Just make sure your option is a specialist, not a quick lube place.
So let's wrap this up. The three pillars of C-Class ownership in Texas. What are they?
Pillar one, respect the heat. Your rubber, plastic, and battery are degrading faster than the manual says.
Okay.
Pillar two, strict intervals. 5,000 to 7,000 miles for oil, service the transmission, fluids are cheap, engines are expensive.
And three?
Specialization. Find a mechanic who understands the specific generation of your car because a W203 is not a W206.
It really changes how you look at the car. It's not an appliance. It's a relationship.
It is. And if you treat it well, it performs incredibly. That engineering shines. If you neglect it, especially here, it will punish you.
Before we sign off, I want to leave our listeners with a final thought. We talked about how the cars evolved from mechanical gears to software code.
Which raises a really provocative question about the future of this trade. As cars become more defined by software and hybrid components, who is the mechanic of the future?
Right. Are we moving toward a world where the person fixing your car is less of a mechanic with a wrench and more of a programmer with a lift?
I think we're already there. And if so, does that mean tuning up your car will eventually just mean debugging it?
Something to think about next time you see that check engine light. Is it a mechanical failure or just a glitch in the matrix? Huge thanks to Autoscope for the technical insights today, and to you, the listener, thanks for joining us. Remember, treat that car as an investment. Drive safe and stay cool out there.
Safe driving, everyone.